Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by HackerOne on Federal News Network.
What seemed like a revolutionary approach to cybersecurity has become routine. The Defense Department pioneered the use of external hackers, so-called ethical or white hat hackers, to probe and discover weaknesses in systems and applications. For an update on how ethical hacking can be used for a variety of purposes, I spoke to the Defense Digital Service expert and lead at Hack the Pentagon, Daniel Bardenstein.
So DDS, we are a small team, relatively new to DOD. We spun out of the U.S. Digital Service around 2016, 2017, became our own entity. We're a small group of technologists that sit under the Office of the Secretary of Defense. So we are, you know, DOD employees, not another contractor. And we bring together a kind of unique fusion of folks with a lot of private sector experience, have career government, civilians, and we have military detailees that come in for various periods to work with us. So we kind of bring the best of all the worlds together, and we affectionately refer to ourselves as a SWAT team of nerds within the DOD. So our job is to take on the meaty, technical, complex problems that face various groups around DOD and see if we can help leapfrog how DOD builds, buys, and deploys any sort of technology, so whether it's software or hardware. So I know today we're talking specifically around ethical hacking and cybersecurity, but that's just one part of the area of projects that we tackle. We do a lot of work with counter UAS or kind of counter drones. So being able to, detect and protect DoD and other U.S. assets from adversarial drones. We did a lot with COVID response. So we played a role, for example, doing cybersecurity for Operation Warp Speed, or now I believe it's known as the Countermeasures Acceleration Group. That was one initiative that I helped lead. Number of other COVID-related jobs. And then we do also just a lot of advising technology best practices. We'll do discovery sprints with various partners around the DoD to help understand kind of the root of a problem, both technologically, organizationally, culturally, and then provide our findings back to both DoD leadership and the partner group that we're working with.
But it's safe to say that this digital service unit, like the others, does do software coding at some point.
Yes, correct. So we have a lot of, internally, we look like a startup in some ways. We have product managers, of which I am one, designers, engineers, data scientists, and our whole support team of legal and budget and HR, et cetera. And so we can rapidly prototype, especially on the coding side. And again, this extends both from software and hardware, rapid prototypes or tools, and that we can then hand off to a partner. So we rarely kind of take and own something very long term. We're not a full program office. We try to stay lean and quick, and we have some unique magic wands, so to speak, that help us cut through a little bit of the bureaucracy to help get things done quickly. But the goal is to get quick results, hand it back to our partners, and help them run with it and succeed.
And I imagine that in anything related to COVID remedy development, Warp Speed, or under the new name, and glad to see that does have continuity that transcends the politics of the people operating under the different names, but still an important national effort, cybersecurity had to be the ultimate front and center concern for something so crucial.
I mean, I believe so. I think it's definitely one of the many concerns. There's a lot of cybersecurity concerns, a lot of physical security concerns. But it was a pretty expansive effort. We co-led along with NSA, and we worked closely with a lot of other cybersecurity agencies around the government to both protect, to protect the entire end-to-end process of the vaccine. So from the research and development, the clinical trials, the distribution, manufacturing, fill finish, kind of the whole gamut across private sector, which is, again, not normally a place where DoD plays, and other government agencies like around HHS. So it was a very unique opportunity for us within DDS. It was very exciting. I got to do a lot of interesting work and a lot of really impactful work.
And given that the idea of ethical hacking also, in many ways, had its origins in the Defense Department, with there's an office devoted to that idea, is that part of the plan for the way you go about cybersecurity is to use pressure testing, if you will, or someone from the external that doesn't know the code internally to try to find ways to hack it or to find the vulnerabilities?
Absolutely. So DDS, one of our core philosophies, especially and missions on the cybersecurity side, is to not only improve the cybersecurity around DoD and the government and its systems, but also to kind of change the culture around how they view cybersecurity and how to engage with it. So, for example, one of the programs we have led for a while now is the Hack the Pentagon program that's been running for 5 years that brought the first bug bounty to the U.S. government, where we basically used literally hackers from around the world and pointed them at various DoD assets for them to break in and highlight vulnerabilities. You know, they responsibly disclosed what they found. They were financially compensated, hence the bug bounty. We brought in private sector platforms to help facilitate. And since then, we've run over 30 bounties over that time across all manner of various assets and networks and websites across DoD. A lot more in the pipeline to come. But really, it's a lot of this culture around the expertise really lies in this hacker community. And like you said, we have a lot of hackers within DoD. But because a lot of them grew up in a very and learn in a very similar, more homogenous pipeline, you get a lot more strength by bringing in folks with different backgrounds, different countries, different schooling, different types of education that approach problems in different ways. And not only does that the diversity of experience and knowledge play a really big impact, but you know, one of the things we're slowly trying to change in the way that the DoD approaches cybersecurity is, you know, right now a lot of cybersecurity is done with compliance and checklists, and you know, there's the risk management framework RMF. There's a lot of stuff with NIST and FISMA, and these frameworks and compliance checklists are helpful in terms of highlighting every single control that you should or could implement to secure a particular system, right? But oftentimes they are very point in time. They just say, "What's the security at this particular time?" And we find that they don't really emulate how a real adversary attacks a system, right? When it's Russia or China or Iran, they're not going through the RMF or NIST framework when they're trying to break into a system, right? They're trying every trick in the book. Many of these groups are well-funded. They have lots of time. And so by bringing in ethical hacking practices, and especially with bug bounties, we're actually able, every single time, every bounty we've run, we've found really meaningful findings that even all of these accredited systems, you know, their owners weren't aware of, right? Because those compliance and security checklists weren't made to emulate how an adversary actually goes after a system. So we found this to be incredibly successful. We've gotten really good engagement from the hacker community. And also, you know, like you mentioned, a lot of the origin, some of the origin comes from DoD and from government. But historically, DoD has not always been really friendly or engaging to the hacker community. So for example, until DDS really pushed the initial vulnerability disclosure program, the VDP. Until that point, it was still a crime for anyone domestically, for example, to report to DoD, hey, I found a vulnerability in a website, or I found something that's on the internet, right? These are citizens that are trying to be good. They could have sold the information elsewhere, but they come to DoD. That was still a crime. They still could have ended up in jail, right? So now with the VDP, which is something that DDS has worked closely with partners like DC3 to push out. Now that was safe. That's now, you know, hackers can go safely disclose vulnerabilities. And then we fought for and finally pushed through after about 25 months an expansion to that VDP this past January, where not only does that scope of the VDP include public-facing websites, it was narrowly defined as websites, now it's any public-facing DoD system in the broadest sense. Anything that's on the internet is fair game for fair, responsible vulnerability disclosure, which is a huge win and something we've fought very hard for.
Daniel Bardenstein, Defense Digital Service expert and lead at Hack the Pentagon. We'll be back with more of the interview after the short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Don't fear hackers. Hire them. That's what the DoD did. Meet HackerOne, the world's most trusted hacker-powered security platform. HackerOne gives organizations access to the largest community of hackers on the planet to find their vulnerabilities before adversaries can. Armed with the most robust database of vulnerability trends and benchmarks, the hacker community mitigates cyber risk by searching, finding, and safely reporting real-world security weaknesses in your digital supply chain, networks, apps, devices, and more. Learn more at HackerOne.com.
Welcome back to our interview with Daniel Bardenstein, Defense Digital Service expert and lead at Hack the Pentagon. Our topic is how to best use external ethical cyber hackers. And just as a practical matter, when authorizing someone to be an ethical hacker that you don't know, what are some of the procedures to make sure that they are not like a exterminator that you hire that brings in the cockroaches?
It's a great question. And we get a lot of questions from our partners, right? The agencies within DoD that want to bring in ethical hackers, but are concerned about what if they run away with our vulnerabilities or our code, etc. So this is where we really lean on our private sector commercial partners. So, for example, we work with, I'll just name a few that we work with, Synac, BugCrowd, HackerOne, for example, among others that are considered leaders in this space. We really lean on them. And again, this is where DDS plays that role because we know the private sector well and we know government well. And we make sure that the companies that we work with, for example, have very stringent processes for doing background checks, for monitoring the researchers as they're going about their, their hacking research on these assets to make sure they're not doing anything out of scope or out of bounds, that they're, the people who are allowed into a specific bounty are actually engaging with it and not just sitting there trying to collect information. And a lot of these companies have the abilities when we need to, for example, restrict the scope of the researchers. So is it just folks within the US? Is it US and Five Eyes? Is it NATO? Is it all over the world? They can do additional screenings. They can check for clearances. They have a lot of tools. And they also have a really strong relationship with the hacker communities, that the companies that do this well, they know that their entire business is based on how many researchers and the quality of researchers that they can bring to their platform. And so the last thing they want is to have a rogue researcher that goes and tanks a bounty. So they have a vested interest in it as well, and we can leverage that. But so far we've had no issues. All the researchers that we've brought in have found really good results. Even things that we found that could have completely compromised an entire network within DoD with catastrophic events, responsibly disclosed for the bounty. And so we're able to successfully vet who comes in. Again, I mentioned background checks. There's several levels of that. For another thing that they do is they'll also conduct skill assessments, right? They only want the top performing hackers, not just any person who just says that I'm a hacker and maybe went through a YouTube class. They really make sure they're real professionals who are really serious about this coming through the platform.
And let me just make a distinction then between the developmental work that you are doing and the traditional bug bounty program, which is hitting systems that are already deployed, and the expansion of from websites to all publicly facing applications that DoD might have. That's a different type of activity than in the scrum type, periodic release type work, where you can catch things before they're compiled into a runtime application. Is there a difference in how you approach the bug bounty looking when you're in development versus when you've already deployed?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question. So, so bug bounty is separate from, technically it's separate from source code analysis, so to speak, but we actually have once before included within scope of a bug bounty source code analysis, right? So for the system that was being tested, the DoD partner provided the source code of what they're working on, and then more specialized hackers in the bounty actually tore through the code to find vulnerabilities there. Again, like you said, that was in this case after production, but what we've seen bug bounties be used for in private industry and even elsewhere in government, and we're trying to bring this more regularly to DoD, is pointing the bug bounties earlier in the development process, right? So before something gets pushed to production, or even doing assessments on regular pushes, right? So you don't necessarily need to do it every 2 weeks. But for example, so if you're developing an agile framework and you're pushing, new patches or updates every 2 weeks, one way you can run a bug bounty is through a continuous bug bounty, right? So there's kind of continuous or time-based. We so far have run mostly time-based bounties that might run for 4 weeks or 8 weeks. They have a specific scope and a specific target system. You can also run continuous bounties where, for example, the Army or the Air Force or a group within can basically have 12 months of researcher time, and they can point the researchers at any single system at any time, wherever it is in the process. So it might be, hey, after 1 month of development, we have a new feature release for this new piece of software we're building. Let's point the bounty researchers at our pre-release software so we can identify the vulnerabilities, fix them in before we then push to production. So the bug bounty is another tool, and a very effective tool, that we want to bring into the whole DevSecOps approach and bring, as they say, farther left into the development process.
And in so doing, is it possible to evaluate or understand the practices of individual coders that might be contributing to that block, such that you can give feedback and say, you're doing this and it's causing this to happen, and maybe improving things, again, very far left in the development process?
Absolutely. So technically, yes, though, as we find it, it's usually not the issue of a specific individual. It's usually more systemic, right? So is it that, you know, our developers aren't doing as good of a job sanitizing user input, right? So something could be vulnerable to SQL injection or other sort of attacks like that. So what these bounties do, and again, we see this even in traditional bounties, is you see each vulnerability on its own, but you can also see the high level, right? How many types of, you know, cross-site scripting vulnerabilities were there? So by looking at the categories and the themes of vulnerabilities that appear, including in the development process, you can get a lot better insight into, yes, you could look at the individuals and give some feedback, possibly in coaching, but most likely the most impactful way for some sort of software factory or shop to take that information is to figure out how do we need, you know, the ultimate goal is to actually bake security into the development process, right? So we need to either test the output of the code very, very early, or also just make our developers more security conscious. And so the bug bounty findings would be a great way to say, hey, here are the top five things that we need to improve in our developers, and maybe we can help them with courses or certificates or whatnot, so that they actually build more secure code, because that saves us a lot more money and time in the future.
And if you walk into a mechanical or machining type of factory, there's often a sign that says how many days since an accident. Do you have signs up in some of the development areas, like how many days since we've had a SQL injection error or something like that?
You know, I think many places would be a lot more secure if they treated cybersecurity in the same way they treated physical security, in the sense that it's a lot more invisible, there's a lot less cost reduction. I think that would actually be a really good idea we'll take back to some of our partners. And what's also tough, as you know, about cybersecurity is a lot of it is trying to prove the value of risk avoidance, right? So we're always trying to prove, we traveled a few weeks ago to a particular site where we were doing on a slightly different initiative some testing around facility-related control systems, right? So your water, HVAC, power, et cetera. And so we were able to compromise some of them at this facility. And so, you know, it's not that, hey, we compromised your HVAC, so your soldiers are going to be a little bit sweatier while they work, but it's help, you know, it's not that much cost currently, but it's trying to get leadership to understand, hey, this little tiny thing could have had much more dire upstream effects had a hacker really gone all the way through and impacted data center air conditioning or things that are, you know, other things on base that are temperature sensitive. So we're always trying to get people to think, you know, what if, and not just in the unlikely possibility, but like, what are the real scenarios that could happen if somebody were to get into a system?
Daniel Bardenstein, defense digital service expert and lead at Hack the Pentagon. We'll return with the third and final segment of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Don't fear hackers. Hire them. That's what the DoD did. Meet HackerOne, the world's most trusted hacker-powered security platform. HackerOne gives organizations access to the largest community of hackers on the planet to find their vulnerabilities before adversaries can. Armed with the most robust database of vulnerability trends and benchmarks, the hacker community mitigates cyber risk by searching, finding, and safely reporting real-world security weaknesses in your digital supply chain, networks, apps, devices, and more. Learn more at HackerOne.com.
Welcome back to the third and final segment of our interview with Daniel Bardenstein, defense digital service expert and lead at Hack the Pentagon. We've been discussing ethical hacking for cybersecurity and other uses. And in using this type of technology and this type of strategy for hitting systems to look for the vulnerabilities, does the bug bounty model or the revealing of bugs model also help perhaps in other areas of software development, such as can it cross over to usability and other qualities in the software that you want to hunt for and improve? Can the bug bounty approach apply in some of those areas?
Yeah, I don't see why it wouldn't. I mean, really, a bug bounty is you provide the scope of what you want the researchers to look for. And again, in a good bug bounty, you can engage with the researchers so far as they are willing to engage back, especially not everyone is eager to talk directly with DoD. But being able to get feedback on the product, how, was it easy to navigate? They might say, hey, the complexity of this interface made it very easy, or the complexity of the included code in this website made it very easy for me to exploit, right? So, not necessarily, I would say, you know, going to use this for like user research or, you know, user experience testing, but you can understand a lot about the complexity of a product and its overall, you know, intuitiveness, not only to build, but also from a code perspective to maintain, right, which is really important.
And looking at it from another angle, as you mentioned, individual code blocks as they're released can be tested for vulnerabilities. And then there is the issue of integration. Once all the pieces are integrated, then compiled, new things emerge. And is there the way to use bug bounty model, the ethical hacker model, I think is a better way to put it, to somehow discover ways that software can be developed in terms of making it more integratable in such a way that does not introduce vulnerabilities over time? That is, improve the whole process in such a way that when these things are finally deployed, they don't have bugs that weren't evident when they were still in pieces.
Absolutely. I think from a software development lifecycle perspective, people should really look at ethical hacking and the role that that plays, kind of like your traditional quality assurance or quality engineering, right? Where your QA or QA engineers are going to look for bugs in functionality, right? At the unit level within a particular block or feature. But then also there's integration testing and scalability testing. Ethical hacking does the same thing, but with the security side. So how can I, QA might... will help confirm that the feature does exactly what it was supposed to do according to spec. Ethical hackers or your security team are going to make sure, can I use this to do things that it shouldn't be able to do that the spec didn't mention at all, right? So that, again, that's at the unit level, that's at the integration level, right? These two parts might be secure when I put them together individually. When I put them together is the way I can jump across things to get functionality that I wasn't able to do. That typically doesn't fall under QA or QE, often does, and for someone with a product management background like myself, I think it would also behoove product and program folks to actually build in security requirements into their PRDs or MRDs, right? We say what we want this piece of code or this feature or this product to do or shouldn't do, right? Or whether this thing should be blue or green or where the user should go after they click this button. But making it very clear for the developers, for the security folks, for QA, QE, hey, they shouldn't be able to jump from this privileged area to this privileged area, or they shouldn't be able to run SQL injection. I think that would help make it very clear from the direction of the entire team. And again, getting upstream to the developers, it'll make a lot more for more secure code and products ultimately.
But fundamentally, then you would conclude that the ethical hacking strategy over the long term does improve software development as a art and as an industry.
100%. And these days, I think it would be pretty easy to, I'm going to go off a hunch here more than hard data, but I think flaws in security that your ethical hacking, put it in the SDLC, would find ultimately save an organization or an agency or a company significantly more money and risk than functionality bugs introduced necessarily by QA, right? If something doesn't work, you can go in and fix the button that it does. If you introduce a flaw that can be exploited, that can reveal sensitive information, that can cost, as we've seen, a lot of money. So it's definitely worth, from a risk reduction, cost savings, usability perspective, to make sure that ethical hacking is definitely part, or some sort of red team approach, is part of the software development lifecycle before something goes out to production.
Daniel Bardenstein, defense digital services expert and lead at Hack the Pentagon. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by HackerOne on Federal News Network.
Don't fear hackers. Hire them. That's what the DoD did. Meet HackerOne, the world's most trusted hacker-powered security platform. HackerOne gives organizations access to the largest community of hackers on the planet to find their vulnerabilities before adversaries can. Armed with the most robust database of vulnerability trends and benchmarks, the hacker community mitigates cyber risk by searching, finding, and safely reporting real-world security weaknesses in your digital supply chain, networks, apps, devices, and more. Learn more at HackerOne.com.